Ganesh Cheesh for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Memories about what we've experienced over the past 2 years are starting to fade, along with some of the other practices that we made a habit, social distancing, wearing masks. But just a reminder, we are headed into the July 4th holiday. We'll be having lots of social contact. So I thought it was a good time to check in with the city and borough of Juneau, which has been managing the response to the pandemic, and joining us, Robert Barr, the deputy city manager. Hello, Robert. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Rhonda. I'm doing well. It's great to chat with you.
It's great to chat with you, too. It's been a while since we checked in, and maybe that's a good thing because it seems like every time we talked before, something was brewing. But I thought we'd begin by talking about the current state of COVID testing, because a lot of that changed when people got these self-testing kits. So the city didn't get that data.
You're right. It sure did, you know, and we knew going into kind of the era of self-testing that we would lose that that ability to see the pandemic, right? And that's just been the strategy that our nation and state and we locally chose, with the idea being that, you know, people would be much more able and willing to test when testing was easy and accessible and, you know, in your own home. And trusting that people would make good decisions with the results of those tests, as opposed to our prior strategy, which was, of course, you know, laboratory-based via drive-through sites and pop-up sites and all of that. So I would say the current state of testing still is largely antigen. We still have those self-tests available at all of our distribution sites throughout the city, the libraries and City Hall and Public Health. Those are still federally funded. We do think that we will get to a point here within the next couple of months where the federal government will stop funding those tests. So that will be another change for us on the testing front when that happens. We'll have to make a decision about whether or not we're willing to fund that locally. And we may not be. It's actually quite expensive. So more on that to come. And then in addition to those self-tests, it is worth noting that the hospital does continue to provide PCR tests. So if folks need or are interested in one of those more sensitive laboratory tests, you can get them at the hospital.
Refresh my memory between the antigen and the PCR tests.
Yeah, so the PCR tests, kind of the high level summary is that they're more accurate, they're more sensitive, and they're more specific. So a PCR test is really good at detecting COVID early in your disease course. So it can be as good as detecting it even before you become transmissible and before you start to experience symptoms. You may recall that early in the pandemic, those PCR tests took us a long time to process. Sometimes it would be, you know, 5, 6, or 7 days before you would get your result. And that wasn't very useful. So when it takes that long time, a less accurate test, like an antigen test, those are less accurate, can be more useful because you get those results faster. So antigen tests, that's kind of the flip side, is they're not as good. The reason why they're not as good is because they have to detect a protein that the virus produces to throw a positive result. And you don't, your body, you know, when you get infected with COVID, it takes some time before your viral load starts to increase and before the virus starts to create those proteins that the test detects. Antigen tests are actually becoming a little bit less sensitive over time. As we've seen this, that as the virus mutates and changes, particularly with the newer Omicron variants, it's requiring a higher and higher concentration of those viral antigens before those tests are popping positive. So for some people now, we've known this anecdotally for a while, and we're starting to see it in the data now, that that it can be, you know, 2 or 3, sometimes even 4 days after your symptoms start before you'll get a positive result on those antigens. So they're still useful, but unfortunately, they are becoming less so as their sensitivity decreases. It'll be interesting to see if you know, we as a you know, society respond by creating new antigen tests that are more suited to Omicron and future evolutions of the virus.
A lot of people have had the virus and milder versions, or they've been asymptomatic. And so they may wonder, like, why should I bother messing with an antigen test or trying to get over to Bartlett to get the PCR test? All the hassle when all I'm going to get is a mild cold. What do you say to that kind of thinking?
Yeah, I certainly understand where folks are coming from. I guess I would say that it's important to know, if you are symptomatic, or if you've had a close contact with someone who's positive and you're likely going to be positive, it's important to know if it's COVID or not, because you want to do your part to not transmit COVID to other people. And you're right, it can be mild. There are plenty of people that get a mild case of COVID. First off, the way we define mild is it can still be serious. It can still knock you out for a week, and no one wants that. And of course, COVID can have significant impacts up to and including death for people who are vulnerable. And there's more of those out there than you might think. So it's important to do our part to keep from transmitting COVID to other people in our lives.
Well, one of the other means back when the pandemic was in its height was to report on hospitalizations. And that seemed to be the true indication of how serious the problem was. So what do we know about hospitalizations right now, especially in Juneau?
Yeah, so our hospitalization numbers are relatively low, but steady. So we generally always have at least one or two people that are fighting COVID in the hospital, that are hospitalized because of COVID. In the past week, we've been more in the 3 to 4 range. We start to get concerned when we see that number pop above 3 or 4. So if we see an increase there, that's something that we keep an eye on, because of course our hospital capacity in Juneau is limited. We only have 9 critical care beds, and when we start seeing increases in hospitalization numbers, we're generally not alone in that. That generally means that other hospitals north and south of us are too, and that starts to impact our ability to medevac individuals who need care for other reasons. So we're not seeing that right now. Hospitalizations have been low and steady, I would say, everywhere. That's not just a Juneau trend right now. Generally the news is, I would say, positive and stable from a hospitalization front.
So are we at the point where we have herd immunity? That was the buzzword back in the beginning of the pandemic. Are we pretty much through the woods with this?
I wish I could say yes. That would certainly be nice to say, but unfortunately herd immunity does not appear that it is going to be a thing for COVID. We are seeing that just the way that COVID works, it is one of those viruses, not unlike the cold or the flu, where we can get it over and over again. So herd immunity is really effective for those viruses like polio or measles, where you can get vaccinated or you can get the virus, one time, and then your immune system responds in such a way that you no longer get it again. And when enough people experience one of those two things, then our community, our society, whatever the population is we're looking at, enjoys herd immunity. But for viruses that can reinfect, and COVID is unfortunately one of those that can reinfect over and over and over again, where herd immunity is not a thing for that one, sad to say.
So let's talk about safety precautions, because we are seeing fewer masks in the grocery store, less social distancing. People are going to places where there are crowds, which they didn't do last year as much. They were starting to, and then the numbers ticked up again. But I'm curious, what do you do, Robert? Do you go to the store wearing a mask?
Yeah, we've definitely entered the area of sort of individual risk assessments and sort of making our own judgments based on whatever we know about the data and whatever our personal risk is. And I think that can reasonably vary from person to person and situation to situation. And I enjoy having those conversations with people and helping them make risk decisions for themselves, and things that factor in when I'm having those conversations are you know, do you have any vulnerable people in your life? And if you do, then you may err a little bit more on the side of caution than if you don't. Or another conversation and something that I personally make decisions about is, you know, am I going to be traveling soon? And is that travel important to me? Because, you know, if I get COVID and I'm supposed to fly out of town in the next couple of days, well, then I can't. So, that's a factor. I'll tell you that, you know, one decision that I make that I'm definitely in the minority on right now is masking up on airplanes. I've flown a fair bit recently, and I'd say the significant majority of folks are no longer masking on planes. I think it's an easy thing to do, right? It's not a hard ask to mask on a plane, and particularly when a plane is taxiing at the beginning of the end of the flight. There's pretty decent data out there that shows that your risk is higher during that time frame because of the air filtration systems that Alaska Airlines and others have done such a good job of implementing to reduce risk are generally not at their peak of effectiveness until the plane is in
Robert,
the air.
I have so, a, you know. I have a true story to share. I have a dear friend who lives in Alaska and wanted to say goodbye to an elderly woman who was on the verge of passing. So she flew and got COVID on that flight somewhere. Yeah. That's the only thing she can think of because she tested before the flight. And after she arrived, she started having symptoms. They were minor, but there was no way that she could see this elderly lady she had gone to visit. Yeah. The thousands of dollars to get a ticket, rent a car. And so she was only able to talk with her on the phone and visit people.
Yeah, that's, you know, so sad.
Yeah, that is so sad, but that's a true story. So maybe you're right, is there's still risk on airplanes.
Yeah.
So do you, at work at CBJ, are people still masking up in the office, or is that pretty much a personal choice at this point?
Some are, some aren't. It is generally a choice right now. We do still require folks to mask up when they've had a close contact. So when it makes sense to require it from that point of view and kind of in line with CDC guidance, we still do. But in general, it's a personal choice. I would say that, you know, we're mixed as an organization right now in masking behavior. And I think that's reasonable for where we're at in the course of the pandemic at the moment. I think, you know, yeah, that's a good way
to
put
it. You know, the other thing, too, is let's talk about vaccine vigilance, because mm-hmm. some people have just resisted getting the boosters. And so where should we be? I've lost track. I get kind of confused when I think back on it. How many vaccines should we have had by this point?
It depends a little bit on your age and your potentially on any kind of contributing medical conditions you might have. But most of the population should have had three doses right now, a full vaccine series and a booster. Some folks over 65, or really anyone with a contributing medical condition would have been eligible for a second booster. Most kids by now, over the age of 5, have been eligible for one booster as well. And then little kids just became eligible for vaccines just very recently. So most of them, if they've had any doses so far, have only had one. So between 1 and 4 is the answer there.
Right. Now you have to only be 6 months old and up to That's be right. able to get a vaccine. So how is that going to work with the city? Because this is new to incorporate the smallest ones into the vaccine process.
Yeah. So our public health partners out on Glacier Highway there at 3412 Glacier, they are vaccinating little kiddos. So if you have a kiddo between the age of six months and 5 years old, you can make an appointment out there. They're vaccinating on Fridays from 8 to 4:30. And due to demand, since this just started, they're also adding Wednesdays for the next 2 weeks from 8:30 to noon. And you can get those appointments at juno.org/vaccine. It's very easy to make an appointment. They have some room for walk-ins, but not much. The appointments have been filling up, so walk-ins have been having to wait a little bit longer. But they're there and available, and there are also some other medical providers that are vaccinating around town too. So you might check in with your doc. I believe Search is one of those too. If you go to Search.
So what is the importance of having kids vaccinated? Because a lot of people wonder, oh, they're so small, they might have side effects. Is it worth the risk?
Yeah. So we're still seeing in the data that the risk of getting, so side effects can happen, but the risk of complicating side effects, if you will, from getting COVID is more significant, more risky than the risk of getting the vaccines. And it's important to remember that the vaccines have been sized appropriately for the kiddo. So, you know, kids under five are getting a much, much smaller dose vaccine than older kids do and that adults do. And there have been good, solid, statistically significant clinical studies that went on to, again, verify that that risk of vaccination is much lower than the risk of getting COVID itself. And COVID's going to be with us. We're all going to be exposed to it at some point. That's a tough thing to say. I wish I didn't have to say that, but it is not going anywhere. So vaccination is important. It is the most effective way to protect ourselves from a severe outcome.
So just a quick question about wiping surfaces and using things to prevent germs, germ-killing substances. Does that really do any good? Some people have told me you're wasting your time. That's just something you're doing to make yourself feel better.
Yeah, yes and no. From a COVID perspective, we've seen in the data that that surface transmission is rare. It is much more likely to COVID to transmit through respiratory aerosols and droplets and, you know, close contact with other people. But other viruses can transmit over surfaces. Flu is a good example of that. So it is not necessarily only a feel-good thing to keep surfaces clean, because you can still get sick from surfaces through other things than COVID.
So do we have anything new on the horizon, any new protections we should be looking to?
We do. So the FDA's vaccine advisory panel actually just today voted to pave the way for updating our vaccine formulations. So both Moderna and Pfizer have Omicron-based vaccine candidates that are in clinical trials right now. And once they get out of those trials, they'll go before the usual process where the FDA looks at them first and then the CDC. And then those will eventually get approved. My best guess is that those will be available to the general public for people that want them, maybe in October, more likely in November. And that'll provide for a good update, because we have seen that with the most recent Omicron variants, especially BA4 and 5, we continue to see declining efficacy of our current vaccines at preventing infection and mild illness. They're still pretty good at protecting against severe disease, but we're starting to see that decline too with the most recent Omicron variants. We don't have much of we started to see that in Alaska. There's more of it in the lower 48. We've seen quite a bit of that in Europe right now.
Well, I have enjoyed checking in with you all along the way over these last months. I guess probably I've been talking to you about a year and a half, and some of our other staff longer than that. And I always ask you this, is what has been your teachable moment or moments? So in wrapping up, what have you learned from all of this? I imagine you keep learning.
There's so many. We could talk about that all by itself for 20 minutes. But I think maybe one that I'll just highlight is, I've really recognized that over the course of the pandemic, when we've been doing so much communication virtually and over the phone and Zoom and that kind of thing, it's so much harder to have really challenging, difficult conversations about areas where we disagree as a community. And those conversations are much more effective, easier to have in person. I guess a teachable moment for me over the course of the pandemic is just recognizing that media matters, and it's important regardless of what medium we're using to have patience with each other when we disagree on a topic, and be kind of willing to be open to have to explore those areas of disagreement so that we can figure out at the end of the day where we can come together and move forward.
Maybe in all of this we've come to value information more. Because information is a tool, or can be. So anyway, I want to thank you for taking time out to bring us up to date. Thank you so much. Robert Barr.
Thank you, Rhonda.
He's deputy city manager for the city and borough of Juneau. Thanks so much and have a good week.
You too. Take care.